There's also these qualities that excellent communicators tend to have in common. So one is knowing what you want. Good communicators know what they want. They know what their intent is going into a communication. For example, is your intent to persuade? Is your intent to perform? I'm sorry, is your intent to inform? Is your intent to be right? Is your intent to convince or defend? Depending on what your intent is, what your goal, your outcome is, your communication will organize around that. How many of you have had that experience where, you know, either with you or with somebody else, that their goal, their intent was to be right, no matter what? Okay? And how effective is that? Right? And then, yet, if your intent is to understand, if your intent is to understand, like you really want to understand what this person is expressing, whether or not you agree with it is a separate thing. But can you understand their perspective? Can you understand where they're coming from? When I was first started in NLP, I worked in a maximum security youth corrections facility in Salt Lake City, Utah, called Decker Lake Youth Center. It was reserved for the worst of the worst of juvenile offenders. So these kids were, you know, your murderers, rapists, hardcore gang members, Satan worshipers, skinheads. They were a tough bunch. And these kids had anywhere from 50 to 150 criminal convictions. And they're just teenagers. So when I got my NLP, you know, got some skills under my belt with NLP, that's where I cut my teeth with these skills. That's where I got to practice. And I figured, wow, if I can be effective with them, I could be effective with anybody. So I'll probably share a few stories of my early day youth corrections experience because they were definitely interesting. But the reason I mention it is because sometimes they would express the most outlandish things I'd ever heard about their beliefs about the world, the way they understood things. And it's like, oh my gosh. And I would go into that curiosity, that frame of like, wow, that's how they think. I mean, that's their map of reality. And again, whether or not I agree with it, I wanted to understand it. And it made sense that if they thought that way, that their behavior would be that way. It totally made sense. Now, it didn't justify, right, make it okay to do some of the things that they did, but I understood it. And now I knew how to work with it. Now I knew if I could shift their map of reality, if I could shift it in a useful way, that then their behavior would change. And I got 40 hours of practice every week working with those young men. So it was a very profound training ground for me to work with. So knowing what you want, notice the responses that you're getting when you're interacting with somebody. So we're going to go into this whole realm of what we call sensory acuity. Teach you how to see things that you normally wouldn't pay attention to. Looking at people and seeing shifts in their, for example, their skin color change, their breathing, the way they move their eyes. All of those things can give you a clue as to not only how they're processing, but what kind of a state they're in, or if they're shifting from one state to another. And you'll start to notice the subtleties in other people's behavior. You'll be able to tell whether or not they're receptive to you, whether or not they're understanding you, whether or not you're in rapport or not with them. And sometimes, another youth corrections example of this was, sometimes the kids would act out in the school, and so the teachers would time them out. And so they would get, you know, the kid would be mad as a wet hornet, and they'd say, "Counselor, you take him to his room." So we'd go extract this kid out, take him down to his room, put him in his room, and then try to get him to calm down, and then wait for the teacher or the principal to invite them back. Well, oftentimes the teachers, partly out of their own exasperation in working with the kid, but they would let him sit down there for hours. And they would stew, you know, they'd smolder until the teacher would invite them to come back up. And this one teacher, for example, she says, you know, and the kid comes up and he's sitting there with his arms folded and there's like lightning bolts coming out of his eyes. And she looks at him and says, "I just want you to apologize. I just need to hear your apology and then you can come back to school." So he looks at her and he says, "I'm sorry." She's okay, fine, you can come on back. Okay. Little lack of sensory acuity there, I think, right? So notice the responses that you're getting from somebody is very, very useful in NLP. And also having behavioral choice and flexibility. So if you know what you want, and you're noticing whether or not what you're doing is working, and then having the flexibility to change what you're doing until you get the result that you're looking for with somebody. So having good behavioral flexibility. One of the things that we're going to talk about is expanding your range and then becoming systematic along the range. So a lot of the skills and techniques, especially this weekend, are going to increase your range of what not only can you notice, but the range of your behaviors. So we might invite you into some kinds of behavior change. And it might feel a little uncomfortable at first because it's new, you know, a little different, something you're not used to. But I think after a while, you'll start to like that feeling a lot because it means you're expanding, you're growing. And it's like, yeah, I'm learning something here. So this is good. And we're going to gently invite you into that ever-expanding sense of increasing your range. And then we'll offer a lot of good skills and techniques that can help you be a great communicator as well. So you'll get, like I say, dozens and dozens of different techniques along the way. So as we go, I'm going to invite you to give yourselves permission to learn. This is a huge, we want to create a safe and supportive learning environment for you, and allow yourself to learn, to make mistakes and to learn from those mistakes, and also to be receptive to the feedback that you'll get. Because that feedback that you get from each other and from the resource people and from the trainers is really going to help you get better and better with your skills much more quickly. Years ago, I've studied martial arts for about 26 years, about a dozen different styles. And one of the first systems that I started studying was a traditional Japanese style called Wado Ryu. And at the time, when I first started, right when I started into college, it was a college PE class is what it was. And Sensei Osaka, who was a sixth degree black belt, he was considered a master in this particular style. And I started, and after a couple of weeks, he started correcting me a lot. And so he kept, you know, correcting my form, my position, and things like that, giving me lots of feedback. And at first, I didn't like that. It felt like, why, I must be really bad if he's giving me all this, you know, all this correction. And he seemed to be correcting me more than other people. And I thought, gosh, I just don't have the aptitude for this kind of a thing. Well, I asked one of the other black belts about that, and he said, no, that's a high compliment. He said, the fact that he's paying attention to you at all, see, it means that he sees your potential, and he's wanting to support you in getting better faster. And so I learned to love the correction so that I could really receive that feedback in a way that was going to be helpful to me. But I had to think about it differently. I had to think about what feedback means and to have somebody correct my form on something. So I really invite you to be open to that from the resource people, from each other, from the trainers, because you'll get better faster if you're open to that kind of feedback.